E rauranga tērā mā, no mā ki te pai o te Waunui. You're listening to Te Waunui, a wrap of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jamie Tahana ahau. This week, Chatham Islands iwi look to the future with the Crown. Co-governance aspirations appear to have been put on hold by the government. And we join a wahakura workshop in Ōtautahi. But first, the whānau of Malachi Subex, the 5-year-old who was tortured and murdered by his carer last year, say a report which details a litany of failures by state agencies in the lead-up to his death confirms what they already knew, that his death was preventable. His murderer, Michaela Barrable, is in prison. But there were many alarms raised and agencies failed to protect Malachi. The review into 6 Crown agencies by Dame Karen Potasi found there were repeated opportunities to save Malachi, but none of these were taken up. His uncle says there is no doubt Malachi would still be alive if Oranga Tamariki had acted appropriately. His statement is voiced.
Inexperienced staff, inappropriate supervision, leadership, resourcing and cultural issues within OT sites and regions, and gaps in the safety nets that should keep children safe are all listed within the reports. OT has acknowledged that it did not follow its own guidelines, never spoke to Malachi or delivered upon its obligations to engage with whānau. Malachi is a change angel. His death cannot be in vain.
Oranga Tamariki's internal report lays out the myriad failings and a lack of action despite repeated family complaints. Dame Karen Potasi is calling for change in the 6 agencies she investigated. She says those who tried to act weren't listened to, those who were uncertain didn't act, and those who knew chose not to act.
Malachi was failed by the system, and that's why I've identified 5 key gaps that need to be addressed to ensure that we have overlapping safety nets. So I'm looking for overlapping hardwired safety nets so that children don't fall between those.
She made 14 recommendations, chief among them mandatory reporting of suspected child abuse. The Children's Minister, Calvin Davis, was asked why the government is only implementing 9 of the 14 recommendations.
Why not prioritise this and why wait till the new year?
Well, we received the report less than a week ago. We have to take time to consider things. We have to make sure, like I said, let's not have knee-jerk reactions. 9 of the 14 recommendations we've accepted or accepted in principle.
In Te Reo Māori, his message to the whānau was clear. He hopes this horrific loss will change the system so that no more children will die.
Tāku ki a rātou, ko tāku tino hia kia panuni hia I te pūnaha kia koreainga tamariki e whara anō.
But already there's scepticism. The Crown has made these failures before. These recommendations have been made before. And these promises have been made before. Again, the Crown is giving itself another chance. But will there be action to back the rhetoric? Tracy Shipton from the child advocacy group Voice Whakarongo Mai told Marnie Dunlop the report was underwhelming and unaspirational.
When I read it, it felt to me like a bibliography of other reports that spelt out one thing, and that is that children just keep dying in this country at the hands of adults. And the more and more I read into that report, everyone just became a spectator in this horrendous blood sport. That's what it felt like to me.
In terms of those recommendations that Dame Karen made, specifically around mandatory reporting as well as vetting carers of those who are sole parents who go into custody, are you in favour of those recommendations?
The strangest thing about this is surely we have mandatory reporting now. That's what we all understand we have. And I saw that there were some definitions around how and who to report to. Are you kidding? So everyone has a responsibility to report abuse in this country. That's what we should be doing. I don't know. It just made no sense to me, the lack of vetting of non-kin family. That's probably the biggest issue for me. When I read this report, I was struck by several things. The voice of that young person was never, ever heard. Malachi's voice was just, it was nowhere. And that would have made a difference. There were opportunities to get his sense on where he would like to be. And the other was the voice of the whānau wasn't there. And that's a natural form of advocacy. to have whānau speaking. They spoke at every opportunity they had to speak up about that young person's safety needs and their willingness to take that family on, to take that child back into their family. I am appalled that someone who was not related to that child got to have him placed with them without any vetting.
What actually needs to change in the systems for there to be outcomes immediately and long term?
Well, I think a couple of things that came through in both of the reports, the Oranga Tamariki report and Dame Karen Patasi's report, the compartmentalisation, that people take care of what is in their business and not in someone else's business. And there was a stopping point. No one's pushing through and trying to link things up. And I saw the quote twice in there that he was invisible because he was not invisible. He was like a neon light. Every single symptom was there, but nobody spoke to him and nobody took seriously the whānau's voice. They were completely pushed out of all the planning around this child. So the answer to what the future looks like and devolution is we have communities and families around people and we need to be engaging with them in a way that works for them, not that works for the system, but that works for whānau, that works for children.
How frustrating is it to see yet another report with similar recommendations?
How frustrating is it? It's a human life. And I keep thinking about this five-year-old child and thinking that he had, for all intents and purposes, a beautiful life ahead of him. And it's not just a system that let him down. It's an entire thing. We have a terrible culture of abuse in this country.
That's Tracy Shipton from Voice Whakarongo Mai. Ngāti Mutunga o Whare Kauri are looking to the future after striking an agreement in principle for a treaty settlement. Lead negotiator Tom McClurg says the Chatham Islands iwi is hopeful this will mark the start of a relationship with the Crown as appropriate treaty partners. He told Pōkere Paewae the settlement will be a launching point for a mix of cultural revitalisation and community-based development.
The difficulties on the Chathams are because most Chathams families are Māori, Moriwari and Pākehā. So there's actually a lot of joint wakapapa on the Chathams. And treaty settlement processes tend to sort of pit one element of that against the other. And we've seen history used as a weapon, really, in that process. And when that happens, then I think distortions are inevitable. So it has been disruptive. And I think everybody's looking forward to the day when we can put the so-called treaty settlement processes behind us and then probably start working together more happily as a community again.
At this point, what will this agreement mean for Ngāti Mutunga o Whare Kauri?
The offer is quite a modest one, really. It's $13 million of redress and $3 million of cultural revitalisation funding. It includes some other cultural redress that is mostly joint now, which is a good thing, including joint ownership by Ngāti Mutunga o Wari Kauri and Moriwari of the bed of Te Whanga Lagoon. And for those who don't know the Chathams, Te Whanga Lagoon is about 20% of the area of Chatham Island. It's 16,000 hectares and about 25 kilometres long. It also includes a small amount of other customary redress. But the most important thing from a Ngāti Mutunga perspective, is that the Crown has acknowledged and will apologise for its failure to give appropriate recognition and respect to the mana and te tino rangatiratanga of Ngāti Mutunga o Wari Kauri. And that failure was manifest first in the process of annexing Wari Kauri, making it part of New Zealand, which didn't happen until November 1842. And it's the Ngāti Mutunga position that the Crown should have applied the framework and the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi to the annexation process. which it certainly didn't do. And because of that, there's never really been a satisfactory or proper treaty relationship between Ngāti Mutunga o Warikauri and the Crown. This has sort of been seen in various ways. For instance, Crown sent a tax collector down to the island in 1855, but people who lived on the Chathams weren't given the right to vote in elections until 1922. You know, the Chathams was used as a penal colony for the political prisoners who were hoholes from 1866 to 68. So 339 people were just incarcerated on the island, where the island itself was a prison. The island was administered by the Department of Island Affairs from 1940 onwards, so just like Tokelau and Niue, and because of that, missed out on many normal services and schemes. So there's just a long history where the relationship, which got off on a bad footing, has never been able to become normal and what it should be. And so we're all hoping that this marks a new start.
And staying with settlements, members of Whakatohia have voted to accept the Crown's $100 million settlement offer. The Eastern Bay of Plenty Iwi's treaty settlement has been one of the longest running and most contentious, with an initial offer rejected in 1996. Some of the Crown's most heinous acts were inflicted on Whakatohia, including scorched earth warfare, brazen raupatu, and the country's only cavalry charge. The settlement process has been long. An initial $40 million offer was rejected 26 years ago. Negotiations have languished, and some hapū objected to the whole process. But this time round, 67% of Whakatohia members have voted to accept settlement. The offer includes $100 million, 500 hectares of marine space, the return of 6,000 hectares of land, and an apology. Ariari mai o koutou tāringa ki te wao nui. You're listening to Te Wao Nui, a wrap of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. Ko Jamie Tahana tōku ingoa. The government is likely to shelve its work on co-governance. It's part of this country's response on how to implement the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The issue has been intensely politicised, particularly by opposition parties. Despite the fact National was in power when New Zealand signed the declaration in 2010 and committed to a declaration plan in 2014. Māori Development Minister Willie Jackson told Newsroom earlier drafts of the declaration plan would not have got through Cabinet, and while work's being done on a new draft, it could all be put off for the election year. Auckland University political scientist Dr. Lara Greaves, Ngāti Kuri Ngāpuhi, spoke with Marnie Dunlop.
I can definitely see people arguing that this is a cop-out or kind of pandering in an election year, because I think, if anything, the election kind of campaigning started, right? It started. We've got an election next year, and this kind of seems like potentially pandering, although some people would argue that it's political pragmatism.
But let's talk about the UNDRIP. I mean, this was signed many years ago and we've been sitting on it ever since. How does that look for us?
Now, it's not a particularly scary thing, but I think a lot of people in certain sectors of society see UN and start to think of the potential for the UN to, say, remove our sovereignty. And it's become quite a politically charged area where there's actually a lot of mis and disinformation. And that's where it is incredibly hard for politicians to get things over the line. It's tricky in a treaty context as well, because obviously we have the treaty and other contexts of Indigenous peoples don't have that protection. So it's all really complicated. And in a way, though, ultimately it is about the politicians having to really get out there and sell it to New Zealanders and really educate New Zealanders. And we haven't really seen much in that space yet.
Essentially, they've failed at that.
Essentially, they haven't really been getting out there. So there's two sides here, but ultimately politics, and when we're talking about things that are constitutional and about a democracy and about te tiriti, the job of politicians is to get out there and sell it and really explain things like co-governance, which is where there seems to be a lot of confusion among a lot of people, but it's not actually that complicated.
Of all the things to shelve, though, shelving this, you talk about it being pragmatic politically?
Oh, it's in a way it is, because I think that as sort of the centre-left label, we're looking at firstly the election and what is in a vote winner, but also around the fact that it may inflame things for Māori. So we've seen Free Waters inflame anti-Māori rhetoric, but you can see where there's certain arguments in this around the idea that you wouldn't want to cause a whole bunch of anti-Māori rhetoric heading into an election year where it might become a political football. Unfortunately, that's the political reality, although that might not be the most moral position.
Hundreds of blades of harakeke are being weaved to raise awareness of safe baby sleeping practices in Christchurch. Between 40 to 60 babies die each year from sudden unexplained death in infancy, where bed sharing is a main risk factor. This week, Te Pua Waitanga Ki Ototahi Trust is restarting its Wahakura workshop after a two-year hiatus during the pandemic. Neva Chittick went along.
Kōrero and the pungent smell of harakeke envelop wahine as they bustle about with their flax pieces. Midwives, students and teachers are among those who are invited by Te Pua Waitanga Ki Ototahi Trust to mark the restart of wahakura, or co-sleeping basket classes. For Trust member Roana Archbold of Ngāti Tūwhare Toa, the wahakura has a personal significance.
My sister actually passed away of suri when I was 3 years old. It was nearly 50 years that we lost manu. So for me particularly, this kaupapa is really, really important, because when whānau lose one of their whānau members, it's absolutely devastating, and that māmai, that pain is there forever. It never goes away and it affects everybody.
Rates of sudden unexplained death in infancy, or suri, have dropped since the 1980s. But in recent years, deaths have begun to plateau, with Māori rates 7 to 8% higher than the general population. Karavel Summerton of Ngāti Tahu, Ngāti Maniapoto, Ngāti Hako is the Trust's recently appointed kairāranga, weaver. She says it was a surprise to learn of the high demand for wahakura.
They give over 50 a month out to whānaus, so hopefully with having the wānangas plus the ladies constantly making them for us, we're going to reach more and more people. And eventually it's going to be a regular thing and not, oh, what was that? You know, it's going to be a normal thing for people.
Ms Summerton says wahakura have many benefits. They protect babies during the cultural practice of co-sleeping, bring a connection to Papa Tuanuku, the earth, and their whānau if handed down. Pregnant sisters Tanya Milnick and Nicole Keo were among the women busy weaving. Both teach in Kohanga Reo, and Ms Milnick says they'll support others with their new knowledge.
We're very high on statistics, so I think just sharing the information, you know, about safe sleeping for our whānau, just to make them more aware, especially with our young whānau as well, to help tautoko them.
Ariana Walker is about to finish her midwifery degree and has made a wahakura every year of her studies.
It's definitely sparked my love for all things, you know, just maturanga in general. I've been able to develop this, so I've been doing the wahakura now, not just in these wānanga, but also out in the community. I'm able to give those wahakura out to family that I'm working with as well.
It's also led her to explore other practices, such as cutting the umbilical cord with pōnamu and using muka, a flax fibre tie, instead of a peg. Daphne O'Connell of Kaitahu teaches the wānanga or workshops. She created the Trust wahakura pattern with the late Dame Aroha Rerete Crofts in 2011 and says it's a joy to be back after 2 years off.
To sit here and look down there, you know, it's just incredible. It's really, really incredible. And then I'm in tears when all the baskets are sitting out there and taking a photo of them. You know, all of them have got a basket. And that's my intention. Nobody goes home without a basket.
Mrs O'Connell says everyone is welcome at the 8 sessions planned next year. No weaving experience or pepe required.
Koina te Waonui I tēnei wiki. That's Te Waonui for this week. You can find all our Māori news stories on our website, rnz.co.nz, under the Te Ao Māori section. Thanks for joining us. Ko Jamie Tahana tēnei. Noho ora mai. Tēnā koutou katoa.